Hi everyone, my name is Cassidy McFadzen and welcome to episode 2 of Poet Voice, the podcast that I'm offering as part of my writer-in-residency at Sheridan College. So today I want to talk about inspiration and where we can get ideas for poetry and prose, and specifically writing outside the self. So many times as writers, I feel in my personal experience and in a lot of the poets that I've talked to that have come to office hours, a lot of our work is focused on feelings of emotion and personal circumstances, personal experiences that we might have had and that we're sort of working through in our poetry, which I think is a really beautiful thing that poetry can do. But I also started thinking of those writers for whatever reason are not comfortable writing from their personal life or feel that they want to keep that part of their lives separate from their creative writing. Or maybe you're someone who's written about a topic or written about an idea from your life so much so that you feel you've exhausted it and you're maybe looking for some inspiration as to another way that you can get ideas for poems sort of outside of the standard, you know, have an emotional experience, write a poem about it and sort of process it in language. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I want to offer today another sort of way into a poem that might be exciting both for you as a poet or for the fiction writers, another way into a short story, but also exciting for the reader. So looking back at my own books, this is actually something that in my first collection, Hacker Packer, I wasn't as comfortable writing poems stemming from real life experiences. And I think I felt a pressure to maybe hide or cloak certain aspects of my real life in my poetry. And one way that I did that was through form. So my first collection features a lot of Old English riddles or mock Old English riddles where you describe an object, you describe an item in figurative terms, leaving the reader to sort of supply the answer. So even though these might be describing ordinary household objects, I do feel there's always an element of yourself and your own personality, your own interests, your own obsessions that shines through. So in the case of the riddles, maybe, you know, ideas of evasion or maybe my discomfort with disclosing real life experiences came through a bit, even though I was sort of using this elusive language and writing in this form that is about concealing what the poem is attempting to describe. So that maybe gives a formal idea. But I also want to talk today about strategies we can use as a way to enter a poem or a fiction piece. And these involve getting out into the world, getting off your laptop, getting out of your notebook, out of your head almost, and being in the world. So when I look back at my second book, Drolleries, I actually received a review where they highlighted the fact that there are so many museum poems, it felt like a museum guide was showing you around. And I don't think they meant that in a positive way. So I'm not advocating for writing a whole book of museum poems, but it is one tool that I've used to enter into a poem, to get ideas for poems, where I'm sort of not just going through my life experiences, but joining them with other motifs, other images, maybe other forms or structures that gives a way into a poem. So in that collection, Drolleries, there's a number of poems that describe museums or pieces of artwork. There's also a lot of, you know, that would be called ekphrastic poems. So I have a 4-page poem describing the unicorn tapestries at the Cloisters Museum in New York. And one thing that I've noticed is that even though, you know, the poem is describing this museum, aspects of your personal life can't help but shine through. So, you know, in this tapestry, the unicorn is evading the hunters. So maybe there's this obsession that I have with, you know, avoiding these sorts of confines, you know, seeking freedom, sort of evading being captured, that I think the form of a poem can be really interesting way to explore that idea, because of course a poem is a form. So the poem, the words can't help but kind of cloister you in and capture you in some way. So this idea of sort of avoiding that while it's you necessarily have to use the form of a poem in which to write. So kind of dealing with that tension is one example of, even though you're describing a work of artwork, some of your ideas or obsessions or themes that you're interested in can't help but shine through, and maybe even some of your emotions and your personal life experiences as well. So one poem that I came across that I want to read today is, I was really excited to see this. So there's a project called the Montreal International Poetry Prize, and it's every 2 years. I believe it offers an award of $10,000 or $20,000 for a single poem. So it's quite exciting. And they've been periodically sharing the short list of the long listed poems. And I was really excited to see a poem by a former professor of mine at the University of Regina named Medri Purdom. And she also released a book in 2021 called Little House Wolf, which is a fantastic collection of poetry. I really admire Medri's craft, her technique, also the emotional core of her work. I mean, I'll read the poem and you can see just what a fantastic poet she is. Her use of language, musicality, her vocabulary, everything is very stunningly arranged. Her attention to craft is incredible. So she actually has two poems on the short list, but for the purposes of this Poet Voice podcast today, I want to read the museum poem that's on the short list. So it's called In Front of Lucy, Our First Mother, My Son Has a Lavish Nosebleed. And of course, the title of the poem is immediately you want to read it. And it sort of ties into what I'm talking about today, because it evokes the skeleton of Lucy, who is an early Australopithecine, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, dated to 3.2 million years ago. So one of our ancestors, the skeleton of Lucy, which is the epigraph tells us, is located in the Natural History Museum of New York. So already we know it's a museum poem. We know it's a travel poem, possibly. But at the same time, it's a very personal poem. So this is a poem doing both things. Not only is it a museum poem, so it gives another way to access or provide inspiration to the poet, perhaps, but it's also, from the title, you know, there's a son, there's an event that has transpired that might be either exciting or traumatic, you know, something has happened, this lavish nosebleed. So already we want to read more. So I'll read this poem and then sort of highlight how I think that it's doing a really good job at sort of fusing, taking elements of writing outside the self in this museum environment, taking inspiration, but also integrating your own experiences and the personal. I'll take a quick sip of orange juice. Okay. In front of Lucy, our first mother, my son has a lavish nosebleed. We wait for platelets to cluster, and I think it's the other way around. I mean, we're not religious, and she's not the Virgin Mary, and my boy's not a wonderstruck urchin in some verdant valley, host to a serpentine river. It should be the stone mother who, weeping, bleeds, and the wayfaring boy who stands with a blank face. Lucy, named for the one in the sky with diamonds, is a vision. The small toboggan of her jaw, her ribs and pelvic girdle are all in pieces. She tells an osseous story of uprightness and of being found. I dab at my child's expressive nose, which, on seeing an ancient mother, calls care for me. He signals from his own troubled membranes, aches for her. I shiver because every family tree is unbroken, every one. Happy, my grandmother thought me kind. She never knew how I nursed my selfish whims. Everything that ever touched her left her before she forgot how to mother. She held our family's latest baby, singing about shaking dreams from the sleep tree, the last song she remembered. She died without me. I die to think of it. And now it's me, singing about shaking dreams from the sleep tree, the last song she remembered before she forgot how to mother. She held our family's latest baby, nursed my selfish whims. Everything that ever touched her left her happy. My grandmother thought me kind. She never knew how I ached for her. I weep because every family tree is unbroken. Everyone calls, care for me. My child signals it from his own troubled membranes. I dab at his expressive nose, which, on seeing an ancient mother, tells a cartilaginous story of an all-rightness and of being found. The small toboggan of her jaw, her pelvic girdle, are all in pieces. Lucy, named for the one in the sky with diamonds, is a vision. The wayfaring boy stands with a blank face, host to a red serpentine river. It should be the stone mother who, weeping, bleeds. My boy is not some wonderstruck urchin in some verdant valley. We're not religious, and she's not the Virgin Mary. We wait for platelets to cluster, and I think it's the other way around. So this poem formally is doing something really exciting that you might have picked up on. And I'll share the poem in the post that will go up on Alchemy so you can read along. But you might have noticed that certain lines repeat. And actually, the whole poem repeats with a few little differences. So this is called a palindrome. So the poem proceeds, the poem goes forward, and then there's sort of a linchpin line, and the poem reverses, and it goes back to the beginning. So lines are slightly changed in order to make the confines of the poem sort of fit, or so that you can still read it both ways. You could read it top to bottom, almost bottom to top. And the line in the middle, which draws our attention to it in being this linchpin line, I'm not sure if there's a specific term for this line. The line in this poem is, "She died without me, I die to think of it, and now it's me," which is such an important poem to the emotion, or sorry, such an important line to the emotion of the poem and sort of its meaning. And after we get that sort of linchpin line, I'm calling it, the poem starts to reverse and we go back to the beginning. So to put it in other words, if we think of the form of the poem as sort of A, B, C, D, E would be the linchpin, and then it would go D, C, B, A, so sort of in reverse. And there's little shifts, as I mentioned, but a really exciting poem. And I think this is a case where the form makes total sense in relation to what the poem is sort of about, or its themes, right? Thinking of DNA, sort of this serpentine twisting thing, thinking of, you know, they're looking at, the speaker is looking at the bones of this Lucy, this 3.2 million year old skeleton, fragment skeleton, thinking of blood, thinking of what you inherit, thinking of the speaker in the middle of the poem, thinking of her grandmother who represents those who have come before her, and then thinking of her son having this nosebleed and those who will come after her. So she's sort of in the center of this line, looking at both her ancestors and her descendants, having this existential moment in the museum, triggered by both, I would say, the artwork or the artifact of Lucy, but also the nosebleed that her son is experiencing. So this is actually an example of a poem where, I mean, the language is so gorgeous, right? I dab at my child's expressive nose. her selfish whims, the small toboggan of her jaw, incredible lines, but it's also, for the purposes of this podcast, a great example of how being in a museum and getting outside your normal routine can take you outside of yourself, sort of allow you to write outside of yourself while at the same time leading you to make associations that you perhaps never would. Like, would the speaker have associated Lucy with her grandmother if she hadn't had this experience in the museum? So for me, writing outside the self allows for more surprising and more exciting sort of epiphanies about yourself and about your brain and how your brain works and makes associations, and may lead to more even, you know, emotional resonance in a piece. So in drawing outside of the speaker's self, in having the museum sort of draw the speaker outside of her perhaps ordinary routine, we're given access to this, you know, beautiful language, the wonderstruck urchin in some verdant valley. You know, we get these associations between blood, what we inherit from those who have come before us, and all these types of things. So this is the poem. I encourage you all to read it, to take a look at this poem, which is really incredible. And I do want to leave you with a few prompts. So you might anticipate what the prompts are. One is to go to a museum, you know, and I misspoke a few lines ago when I said artwork instead of object, but that's part of this prompt, is to, you know, you could go to an art gallery and look at a piece of artwork and have this perhaps be drawn outside your normal routine. It might give you inspiration for a poem, for a short story, encountering a painting or a sculpture. Or if you go to a typical natural history museum, definitely an object or an artifact, you can have this sort of similar sense of being outside yourself and writing outside yourself. Taking another sip. And then my second prompt idea is sort of another sense of defamiliarization, which I always find useful when writing, is to visit perhaps a part of your city, your town. I know Thanksgiving is coming up, so if anyone's going home for Thanksgiving, it can be really interesting to return to, you know, your old, even your old bedroom, but your old neighborhood, and see what has changed. And you might feel defamiliarized from the image you have of your childhood, which is in your head, and then when you go and encounter it in person, you might have this sort of experience of, yeah, there might be some emotional wrinkles that have emerged. There might be some connections that you didn't realize. You might see your family in a different way. You can also do a fun exercise and pretend that you're an alien, you know, coming to this place. How would you describe it? Or if you were writing to a pen pal who had never visited your home, how would you describe your school playground, or the way that your mom prepares the Thanksgiving meal, to sort of take you outside yourself and have that experience of defamiliarization. I think this prompt would be especially useful for fiction, right? So many stories about a character returning home. And of course, you can never truly return home, right? It's not quite the same. So investigating that tension between maybe the character's nostalgia or expectations versus what they are encountering in real time might lead to some interesting conflict or tension in a short story. And then the final prompt idea is to write a palindrome poem. This is the form of the poem that I read for you, and I think it can be, it's quite a challenging form to make all the lines fit, so you can sort of read it both forward and reverse. It's quite challenging, but I think it definitely is worth playing around with and challenging yourself to explore that form. So if you choose the third option, I would encourage you to read Madri's poem again and sort of, you know, see how she's able to write these lines that lead into the next, maybe making tiny little adjustments on the second, on the reverse of the lines. But it's quite, you know, it's quite a challenge. I've never attempted a palindrome, so I'm in awe of this form, and I think it might be exciting. If you don't have to write one quite as long as this poem, you could write a shorter palindrome, and that might be something exciting to explore. So those are the three prompts for this episode of Poet Voice. I hope you enjoyed Madri's poem. I highly recommend Little House Wolf, her collection from 2021. And for this week, I would encourage you to write outside the self, either through visiting a museum and getting inspiration, an art gallery, or traveling, you know, defamiliarizing yourself from your surroundings, maybe what you thought of your hometown, and how this might allow you to return to the self in a roundabout way. So I hope you enjoyed the discussion tonight, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.